Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome everybody online and listening online and calling in. We're ready for some labyrinth. And first, I want to welcome Donna. Good evening, Donna. Welcome to the backyard.
Good evening. How are you doing this evening?
Just chilling.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I was thinking, I says, you know what, since you're talking about the music industry, maybe next time we can, you know, play some Bob Marley or something.
All right, yes. Well, what we're going to discuss tonight goes way back before Bob was born.
Okay.
It's the oldest night tonight, but that's a great idea. I see that we have 646, and let's see if it's our loyal Bronx man on the phone. Good evening. Who do we have at 646-479?
Yeah, this is Lay from the Bronx, the home of the Yankees.
All right. Don't rub it in now. Welcome to the backyard.
Yeah.
How is the weather in New York?
It's wonderful, cold, but wonderful, as opposed to the last previous days.
Right. Well, I just want to tell you that we had our first beautiful snowfall here in Atlanta, and it was so gorgeous. Didn't last long.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, well, we didn't have to close. You know, we could have an inch of snow down here, and everything shuts down. That didn't happen this time.
we were just kind of hoping, but it was okay. The kids got out and made snowman. It didn't quite look like a snowman, but he was the best that we could do.
Right.
Were you out there throwing snowballs, Donna?
You know, they threw snowballs at me, but I was trying to be diligent and build the snowman.
Chicken.
Well, I want to welcome all our listeners, and this evening, first of all, I want to thank all our listeners for their comments about our Jamaica History Month. That was really exciting. We learned a lot about the past and what happened in Jamaica to help make us who we are. And tonight we have a little different format. It's a new month. But first I'd like to just share with our listeners something that I just heard. As a matter of fact, I think it was on Entertainment Tonight. You know, you all know that we're in a recession. Perhaps, I mean, I am not really totally buying into it, but it is what it is. So, you know, if America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Don't we know that, Leigh?
Absolutely.
So, it was interesting. I was watching ET, and they had a 92-year-old grandma who had lived through the past depression here and was giving cooking tips. It was so cute. As a matter of fact, one of her grandsons, I think, decided to video her while she was doing some depression cooking, she called it. It's called Depression Cooking with Clara. And she was 93, and she was showing people how to just mix up all of this thing that wouldn't cost much money because it was made from, you know, pasta and whatever. And she was talking about what life was like during the Depression. And it just made me think more about what we're trying to do here, you know, in terms of having some of the seniors leave their stories. You know, I was so impressed. She's 93, and she was just cooking up a storm, being videotaped. Now, I think her grandson just sort of did it to put it on YouTube, and now she has fans, thousands of fans all over the world. People are writing in from Holland, from all over.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Isn't that something?
Hey, well, at least she utilized something that she had that information and knowledge that she had from the past and brought it forward to the future to share with everyone.
Right.
You know,
she was not afraid of the technology.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm hoping that more of our people in the diaspora will jump in and help us to leave some stories that will be meaningful. So this evening, you know, she gave me an idea, and I decided to just, I always go and research the Jamaican papers anyhow, but I came across the most interesting article that I want to share with the rest of our listeners, and I'll just call this Did You Know, because I'm going to ask our favorite fan in the Bronx if he knew. So, Mr. Favorite Fan, Yankee fan from the Bronx, did you know that there are over 1,000 centenarians living in Jamaica?
Who?
Over 1,000 people who are over 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
And remember now, we only have 2.5 million people living there.
You say how many, 100,000?
No, 1,000.
1,000. That's still a lot.
That's still a lot compared to the total population, is my point.
I wonder what's their secret for long living.
Well, you know, I'm going to be on top of that. I'm going to write the reporter who did that thing. But it said for mathematicians, this is more than 100 years combined. Wow. Over 700 of them are actually on the voters list. And that's how... And this is Denise Scherer. You know, I think she's a professor of public health and aging at UC. Now, she was giving a speech, an address at the Gleaner Company's Pensioners Luncheon in Jamaica recently, you know, just a couple of days ago. So that's why this report was out. But it just tied in nicely with this 93-year-old that I'd seen giving these recipes. And I thought it was really neat. Now, as I said, 700 of them are still voting. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to write to whoever wrote this and find out if there are any of those, if are there any of them that perhaps we could talk to. But that led me to looking up, I love the internet, really, because you can get so much information real fast. But now this is a quiz for you, Donna.
Uh-oh.
How many centenarians do you figure, can you guess, live in the United States?
2,000.
Lady, would you like to take a guess?
I did. I test my guess.
I would say. I would say maybe 8,000.
Well, boy, do I have a surprise for you.
Uh oh, but eat too much bacon.
Honey, it's a lot more than you think.
Oh, okay.
There are 76,000.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Now, what do you call them? Centenarians, or?
It's C-E-N-T-E-N-A-R-I-A-N-S, centenarians.
That's for the from the Latin word for 100.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. You got to get to that Latin. You know, you know, Lay is the Latin guy.
Well, you know you're well-schooled. When you know the Latin.
The thing is, Donna, that we are always surprised that the English is derived from Latin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
And in the old days when English was in its glory, because even English, the American style, has changed, you know, over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
There are words added, words not used anymore. Now, in England, they're more, I think they don't have as many changes, accepted changes anyhow. And because I think that we were in a British country, we used and continue to use more of the words that perhaps are not used as often here.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. Yeah, if you do crossword puzzles and word games,
mm-hmm.
you'll find that if you did Latin in school, you're way ahead of the game because you can see how the meanings of the word just spill out at you, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our Person of the Week. And it is my pleasure, and Donna, I think you're going to recognize this name because we had the pleasure of being in the company of our Person of the Week. And our Person of the Week is here in Atlanta, and it's a female. She is Dr. Beverly Hall.
Okay.
And Dr. Hall is one of the foremost educators in the United States today.
Didn't she get
an award? Yes, that's what I'm going to read about.
Okay.
She's the superintendent of the Atlanta Public Schools.
Yeah.
An urban school system of 96 schools with approximately 52,000 students and over 4,100 teachers. Now,
mm-hmm.
under her leadership since 1999, this once low-performing school system has embarked on a comprehensive school reform program. The results are so far have been remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the APS, as it's called, Atlanta Public School, is the nation's only urban district where 100% of elementary schools met federal academic targets in the whole, in the entire United States. Math and reading scores since 2003 have improved faster than any other urban school district.
Yeah.
Schools once labeled the lowest performing are being turned around, and the system has shown a consistent 8-year trend of progress.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something? I am so proud of Dr. Beverly Hall.
Yeah.
So she's our person of the week.
That's wonderful. Now, do you have that on the site, or is it just
Well, you know, I selected her at the last moment, but it will be up by tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put it up by tomorrow.
We've really been talking about her and how they're looking at bringing her in to discuss with the president. How she's turned around the educational system in Atlanta, because they were really in bad shape before she came
up. Yes.
And it's just her passion for education and her passion for the children, and which is really something. And you can see it when they show pictures of her walking around and just how she really just, you know, loves the children and also how she recognizes her teachers. I mean,
right.
You know, respect, so... And because of how she treats them, they give her, you know, 110%, and that's really good.
Well, I just wanted to tell our listeners that might not know, you know, we're here, Donna and I are here in New York, but we have listeners listening from all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to let them know that Dr. Hall was born in Jamaica and migrated to the United States after attending high schools at St. Hilda's and St. Andrews. So she went to both. She's a Hilda's Old Girls and an Andrews Old Girls. She, I'm sure some of our listeners can definitely relate to those two schools. Were you about to say something, Lane?
No, I said those are very good schools.
Yes. Now, she earned her Doctor of Education degree from
Fordham. I'll leave you for a while. Hold on. I hope I won't miss too much.
Okay. Yes, at Fordham University, before coming to Atlanta, Dr. Hall was State District Superintendent of the Newark Public Schools, the largest school district in the state of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's got a whole lot of accolades, you know, that it just goes on and on. And she is chair of Howard University's Urban Superintendent Program. She's on the advisory board of several different things. You know, I just commend these professional women who can just wear so many hats and be involved in so many things, and especially when it's in the area of education.
Mm.
Because, you know, right now, as the president says, you know, we've got to get our educational system up to par with the rest of the developing world, because most of our scientists and, you know, mathematicians and the technical skills are usually imported, you know, from India and China.
Mm.
So we just definitely need to celebrate and to really try to promote anything that is educational to help our country, that will help our country in the future.
Right, right. Well, you know, one of the things that was really, that I thought a lot of people may not know, but, I mean, she was selected. I mean, we're talking about, you know, I think about 49 states as well as overseas superintendents. And, I mean, they're ultimately they you know, whittled that down to 4. And then she, you know, became number one out of, I mean, that's a lot of people you got to figure. And,
oh, yes. That is,
you know, a lot of smart.
Quite an honor for her. This is quite an honor.
Yeah.
And you know that she got there because of the results.
Right.
You know, definitely because of the results.
Oh,
and it just shows you that when someone is passionate about whatever they're doing, you know, if the passion is there, you know, the dedication is going to be there. And that is all, you know, that spills over on other people. When you have the leader, that's why sometimes even leaders that might have a passion that is not very positive, they'll still get a lot of people to follow them. So passion is very important, and it's just wonderful when it's being, you know, the passion is about something that can help a lot of other people, and in this case, help the world, because then I'm sure that all these other people that was more or less in competition with her are also passionate about, you know, what they're doing. Well, so that was really great.
One of the things that she says that I say that's really important too, and even Kathy Cox, the state superintendent of over school, she said that one of the things that Ms. Hall has done is that she actually, for one thing, you know, she enjoyed the challenge, of course, because you can imagine that was a definite challenge for her. But she said one thing about Beverly is that she called her friend, her colleague, and she says one thing about Beverly is that she's not afraid of, but the thing about it, she wants you to hold her accountable for what she says she's going to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, she has forged more relationships with the business community, which is something that is really important. I came to find out it's so important for the business community to be involved. Like even now, like you were talking about in these economic times, here in Cobb County, they've really cracked down on you know, you getting copies or the teachers sending making any type of copies or laminating anything because their budget is really tight right now. But, you know, if they have the business relationships, and so what I did, you know, was I contacted some businesses in the area, and they're donating, you know, copy paper and stuff like that. But you do have to have that business relationship, and that's one of the things that she's done that everyone is talking about. How does she do it? How is she, you know, challenging the business community to come in and be more active in the school, giving grants and, you know, and all of that, and just, you know, just her leadership in that capacity.
Yeah, well, I see here where in one case the Atlanta Public School received $22 million grant from General Electric Foundation. And that was the largest privately awarded grant to the school system.
Wow.
Yeah, and she's, you know, that is for intensive math and science instructions, which is really so important. And has been sort of put on the back burner for a very long time. And it's sort of the basis for so many other important disciplines, you know. So if the children get that direction early in life, I'm sure it will spill over, you know, when they get to college. And they will want to go into to professions that this is really needed, which is very important to the recovery of the country. You know, recently I read something online that a large percentage of the really scientific and, as I mentioned, mathematic brain was imported from other countries. You know, in places like Silicon Valley and the research division of, you know, different things, that most of those talent was imported. And now most of them are going back to their countries because right now there's more opportunity where they came from than here. So it's really, you know, important. That and I thought it was interesting that she got such a big grant, and of course it's because of the performance and what's being done.
Well, you know, again, that's what I was saying, and obviously, you know, that was one of the things that I noticed about the elementary school out here was that they were getting. You gotta have. I think that's one of the keys to having a good educational system. Not, you know, you talk about combining with the business community. That's one of the things that she's done. But obviously, that's a key component because I when you said that, I realized that the elementary schools out here were starting to get these grants, and it was helping them with being able to bring smart boards and computers into the school and things like that. And so that is very critical, is having a good grant writer, because they even use that with field trips now, where they're able to, you know, go to, because I know Kayla was going to the aquarium, and her whole class, all of the kindergarten and first graders were going to get a chance to go for $6 because of this grant, you know, that they had gotten, which is really
wonderful. Really wonderful.
That's something, you know, to think about. You know, that might be the one of the key components to being able to continue to fund your school and bring it, you know, up to snuff and, you know, like you said, with math and science.
Definitely. Okay. Well, I want to welcome our listeners and online, and also let you know that you're listening to the Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and we're just labrishing, chilling out, and sharing information with Jamaicans, friends of Jamaica, people living in Jamaica, all over the world. We welcome you and ask you to not only join us on our radio show, but also to visit our website, www.backyardlabrish.com, and become a member of the community. The whole objective of the of Backyard Labrish is to have Jamaicans, and as I said, people who love Jamaica, and Jamaicans, and Jabrits, and Jacans, wherever you were born, if you have some roots in Jamaica, or you just love Jamaica, or you love culture, we invite you to become a part of our community. Share your stories and interact with each other. From time to time, we're having special information to share with you that you might find interesting, and we really welcome your feedback. So now, Donna, I'm going to tell our listeners a little history for those who might not go back this far to our radio in Jamaica. Now, it's almost 50 years. I'm reading from an article from Pieces of the Past. Some 50 years after its inception, radio is still the most powerful, far-reaching form of media in Jamaica. More than 2 million of the island's 2.5 million people are said to be radio listeners. So, you know, in the remote, this is me talking now, in the remote parts of the island, perhaps, you know, the farmers and the country people might not be reading the Gleaner every day, but they're certainly listening to radio. And it has always been like that. Almost everywhere one goes in Jamaica, one hears the sounds of music and voices of people expressing their opinions on numerous talk show, offices, streets, corners, restaurants, and bars. Anywhere you find a group of Jamaicans gathered, you will more likely find a radio playing. Now, radio's relationship with the national psyche began as early as 1939, when the first broadcast was transmitted via a shortwave ham-operated unit from the Seaview Avenue home of the unit's owner, John Garin. No, I'm sorry, Garin, G-R-I-N-A-N. The call signal was VP5PZ, and it was offered wartime news and information for a half an hour once a week. I didn't even know that. The first broadcast was done on a shortwave ham radio just by a private person. Isn't that something? I had no idea. And I hope that the listeners will find that information interesting. Now, by 1940, this citizen negotiated with the colonial government to set up a station that became known as ZQI. That's what I remembered. And the frequency and variety of broadcasts increased. But listenership never totaled more than 100,000 given the relative high cost of radio sets. Well, I know that we had one. So, you know, ZQI was the first radio that I actually knew about. You know, that was the call letters of the radio. And that, of course, in 1939, let me see, four, five, six, seven, I was five. I was 5 years old. So I thought that was very interesting. So I see, Leah, are you back? Hello? I guess he's...
you know, yeah. One of the things is...
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, well, did you hear that tidbit that the first radio frequency was transmitted by a ham operator on Seaview Avenue? You know that is in our neck of the woods, isn't it?
Okay.
Seaview Avenue.
I don't remember where that is.
But I think it was somewhere in Franklintown or you know, off of Windward Road there.
And
you're probably thinking of Ocean View Avenue.
Oh, I could, well, I know it has something to do with
it's
the other.
It's Seaview Avenue, St. Andrews.
It's in St.
Yeah,
Andrews, okay. Well,
right.
Well, we call all of that part of Kingston anyhow. So, it's, in other words, it wasn't in the country, it was Kingston.
Right.
But do you did you know, Leigh, that that was in 1939? And
well, I know my father was an avid listener on that, you know, the radio station. We had our
QI.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I can remember the radio host.
Uh-huh.
Was it Dennis Glicker?
Well, I'm reading from a piece I took from the pieces of the past. In July of 1950, which was 51 years ago, commercial radio broadcasting began when the government, like those in many other Caribbean territories during that decade, granted a license to the Jamaican Broadcasting Company, a subsidiary of the British Rediffusion Company. Do you remember that word?
Yeah.
Rediffusion, we had a rediffusion box.
Everything went downhill after that.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Right. That signaled the birth of Radio Jamaica and the Rediffusion Network, or
yeah,
as we know it today, RJR.
Yeah.
Now, four transmitting sites were established across the island to carry the medium wave signals. The early RJR was quite British in character, producing a very BBC-like format.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely, however, more and more Jamaicans moved in, and some of the flavor of Jamaica began to be heard. I remember hearing a lot about the war and the BBC News always on the radio.
Right.
I remember that as a child growing up.
And I'm still a BBC fan.
Right, right. Well, popular shows included The Talent Parade.
Yeah.
Opened by Carl Magnus.
Yep.
And a regular, well, look, here's something that just came to me. That was his line. Well, look, here's something that just came to me. I don't remember that. It might be a little before my time. Do you remember that?
Well, look.
Yeah, that was his sort of tagline. You know, well, look, something.
No, I just remember his name. I don't remember the content, but I remember his name, yes.
How about Archie Lindo?
Oh, yes.
And Hugh Wilson?
I don't particularly remember Wilson, but I remember Archie Lindo very well.
Right. Now, the Talent Parade showcased local talent broadcast from Carib Theater and played the launch and career of well-loved entertainer, including Ronnie Williams and Louise Bennett.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of helped to launch them. Other popular shows included Alma Mock Yen's Tea Time. This must be an Oriental person. Her last name is spelled MOCK-YENS.
Yeah. Mark, we call, I have a very good friend who is a Monsignor, and his name is Mark Yen. And we don't call him Mark Yen, we call him Mark Yen.
Oh,
you know?
Well, well, it's spelled Y-E-N there.
Yeah.
Well, apparently...
And actually, that's a Vietnamese name, but we don't know anything about derivatives in our people. We just know them as Jamaicans. So.
Right. Alma must be one of his
relatives.
And she had the tea time. Mm-hmm. And they have had the Busy Bee Club for children. Huh, I don't remember that.
What that was about.
Excuse me?
I wonder what that was about.
I don't know. I wish there would be some of our listeners that might can relate to what the Busy Bee Club in those days and share with us. And that's something that perhaps I can check on. Oh, that is so neat. How about Merrick Needham?
No.
Do you remember that name?
No.
Dorothy Hosang.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Lanneman's Lollipop Land for Children.
What is that?
Yeah.
That sounds neat.
You remember that?
Yeah, Lanneman's Sweets.
Yeah. You remember, what was your favorite Lanneman's Sweet? Paradise Plum.
Paradise Plum. Oh my goodness.
You know, I remember when I came here to the States in 1959, and I was thinking that they would have some exotic candy that would really pique my interest. But, you know, I was such a fan of the Paradise Plum that I was like on a search. So when I went to Manhattan or wherever, I would try to find a hard candy and do a comparison study. And then I said to myself, why isn't there a Lanneman's up here? And why aren't they importing this very exotic candy? And that has been how many years, Leigh? And I haven't found one candy.
Well, you wouldn't, because like everything else, that had a unique taste. And
oh, my goodness.
Nobody else would probably have the recipe for that.
Right. And I'm wondering, with all, you know, we're now importing almost everything, and a lot of the sodas, Red Stripe beer, the rum, but I don't know if Lanneman's is still in existence, and if they are.
It is still in existence, but this, of course, is many years later, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the original owner migrated to the States.
Ah.
And he was a good friend of my mother's, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
And whoever was left there ran the business, but then, you know, I think they sold out after a while.
All right. Well, let me run some more names by you, because a lot of these ring a bell for me. Adrian Robinson.
Oh, don't I know him? Yeah.
Tony Verity.
Yes. Yeah.
Roy Reed. Reed at Random.
No, I don't know.
That was
know
his
her
show. Oh, my goodness. Randolph Butler. The Butler Did It. That
no,
was his show.
Yeah,
the Butler Did It. Oh, my.
And Dorothy LaCroix, better known as Dottie Dean. What's funny?
Why, where are you digging up all of this?
Ooh,
from?
Well, that is what the show is about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's for back in the days. And we are here to make memories. So all the Jamaicans can really start researching these names and say, what the heck are those old people talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Now, wait a minute. The guy, the butler guy, do he do like some type of program where, I mean, you said the butler did it. Is this like a show?
Yeah, that was the name of, he had a show that, and the name of the show was the Butler Did It, Midnight Mood. That I suppose, that, you know, Jamaicans are known to sort of love taglines, and we call people by different names and put little attachment to them depending on what they do. So I suppose that because his name was Butler.
Okay.
And, you know, there's been a lot of, well, the old-time English movies, Leigh, I'm sure you can relate to this, was always mysteries, and it usually ended up that the butler did it. You know what I mean, right, Leigh?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But you know, it was based on that premise.
Mm-hmm.
But listen now, in the 50s now, in an effort to broaden leadership in the early 1950s, RJR distributed about 200 little brown radio boxes, rediffusion boxes they were called, to locations like police stations, schools, and shops, so that more Jamaicans would have access to radio information and programming. By 1954, over 57,000 rediffusion sets were in use, and over 285,000 Jamaicans were confirmed radio listeners, a major increase from 1947. Now, radio programs also began to be sponsored by companies that increasingly used the radio as a medium of advertisement. Now, you see how long it took us to commercialize it, Donna. In all those years, it started in 1939, and it was not until about 1947 that they started to do commercials.
Didn't that have something to do with them getting licensed through the government, and then they?
No, they were licensed before that.
Well, no, they had to get something, a permit or something. What did they get through the government?
No. What I think I read was that, you know, the first man who did his little ham thing.
Right.
Leigh, his name is spelled Grinan. How do you say that?
Grinan. I don't know him.
I don't. I'm not familiar with that name in Jamaica.
I can't remember
a lot of people with that.
You know, not in the beginning, like in you mentioned 1939.
39, yeah, that's
in
when
those,
he started.
In those days, not too many people had radios.
Right.
You know, I can remember as a kid when they had the heavyweight fights.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a smart entrepreneur, I could have collected a penny for everybody that was at the gate listening to the fight.
The radio, yes, I remember
mean,
that too. People
know,
used to come outside, the people who didn't
crowd.
Have one.
Yeah, there were only three radios on my street.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
We had one of them.
Right. I remember the ones that we had at our house. You know, I remember what they looked like.
So you come down to the 50s now, and all of the average people, so to speak, had access to this rediffusion.
Right.
And for a slight charge, you could have it into your homes.
Yep.
And it had the one station, which is JBC, right?
RJR.
RJR.
RJR. It was ZQI at first, and then it became
RJR.
Looking at it, and it was saying that it says under the weight of public criticism at the high cost of running the station, decision was taken by the government to issue a license to a private company to provide broadcasting services. The license was granted in 1949 to the Jamaican Broadcasting Company, a subsidiary of the Rediffusion Group of London. The license gave the company the right to operate regular broadcasting and rediffusion services, and the Jamaican Broadcasting Company took over the operation of ZQI on May 1st, 1950. Commercial broadcasting began July 9th, 1950, using the call sign Radio Jamaica and the Rediffusion Network.
Right. Yep. I remember that rediffusion word so well.
Now, I'm trying to remember if we had to pay a license to operate the radio. I don't remember that.
No, I don't think so. I don't remember that either.
I mean, our parents probably would be involved in that. But
they never discussed anything with us when we were growing up. We never knew about any financial things.
And it was saying that the company was given a mandate to cover the entire island with radio broadcasting to ensure that rural dwellers could become oriented to radio. The company distributed the wireless receiving sets to the 200 designated listening posts throughout the island.
And that was the police stations and schools and shops. That's what it mentioned here. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Communal locations, they're called.
Where are you reading that from, Donna?
The History of Radio Jamaica. It's just something that I got doing just some general research, because what happened was when I saw that it said RJR and it said ZQI. Well, of course, I didn't know what that was about. I was like, now what is this about? So I just, I just went in and Googled it, and then it came up with the History of Radio Jamaica.
Right. Well, we knew it from we call it ZQI.
Oh, okay.
English pronounced Z as Z.
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
Yes. As we pronounce quite a few words different from the American version. We even spell them different. It's so funny because most times when I type anything in, it have a red line on under it, and I'm a little confused. But it's because we put the O and the U in a lot of words that you don't.
So do you all stand in a queue?
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Well, we spell our check.
I had a big fight with my secretary because when I moved from my Brooklyn office to the headquarters office in New York, and I was right across the street from Radio City, so I came back at lunchtime and said I queued up to get the Christmas a ticket. She says, "What do you mean by that?" we don't use that here.
Yeah, isn't that something?
that word. So I gave her a good dressing down and showed her a dictionary, and she was, I don't know if she was red-faced or embarrassed or what.
I was actually in Hawaii, and I was waiting for breakfast, and this couple was standing behind us, and they says, "Well, I guess we're going to just have to, queue up for this. Yeah, for this breakfast." I said, "Queue up for the breakfast," or something like that. And she says, yes. I said, "Does that mean you're standing in line or that you're tuning up for it?"
Isn't that something? Yeah, it's like when I came here first and I would spell check CHEQUE. I mean, people would look at me as if I'm crazy. What the heck is that? So it's I don't know if they're using that same kind of spelling now. I really don't know. But anyway, let me just finish reading from the article I'm reading from came from Pieces of the Past. It says between 1950 and the mid 1960s, RJR became a household word, and improvements in radio transmission occurred in 1951, ushered in wire radio service, meaning that transmissions were sent from a central station, better able to withstand atmospheric conditions and reach a wider listenership. But to receive them, you had to be a rediffusion subscriber, paying, listen to this, they did pay, paying three cents a day, three pence a day.
Okay.
Isn't that something? The early form of radio transmission was a bit like cable TV, but with sound. That's an interesting comparison.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so we did pay. They did pay, not we. But, it's funny. I think Leigh can relate to this. In the early days when we were growing up, things like finances and things that went on like that, children were not, it wasn't discussed in front of us. Usually we were put in our rooms or someplace when adults were in conversation, you know, and the saying was a child should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Lee?
Well, that's taking it too far, you know. When they, for instance, would be discussing their budgeting and their expenses, that wouldn't be a place where the children would be convened and listening. So it's we were really not included in those discussions.
I remember when I used to go down to visit my Aunt Lola, we were really given allowance, which was really cool in those days. But we would have to put our little thing in the envelope. I think they were sort of teaching us, you know, about how to spend your money. And we always had to put how much for the collection. And, you know, we had these little envelopes that we would write on. And you would have a part of the money to go buy what you want. But, you know, you had to put the 10% of whatever you got.
Your tithe.
Right, in the collection envelope.
We didn't have tithe in our church.
You didn't?
No.
Really?
I came across tithing for the first in Brooklyn.
In the same Catholic church?
Well, no, even then the Catholic churches are now doing it. And
uh-huh.
Only because they had such an influence of the West Indian people in these churches in Brooklyn. But the Catholic churches didn't do tithing in the past.
Right, right. You just give freely whatever you want to give.
Yeah, it was their right to collect your offerings.
Right. But then the Catholics, as I remember it when I was growing up, were some of the only ones that were doing like raffles and things like that. Didn't they always do that?
Oh, yeah, bingo, raffles.
Right, they were always gambling. They were always gambling when the other church...
You call it gambling?
Well, it was gambling. You take a chance. You might win. It's good. That's gambling.
Yeah, well...
What do you want to gloss it over? That's a collection that's gambling.
You're enticing me to give my money.
We call them fundraisers, please.
Well,
yeah.
No fun when you lose.
Hey, but you know what? I'm going to tell you one of the things that was really neat, which is unlike a lot of schools today, is that I never had to bring home those candy things to raise candy or sell anything.
Oh, yes.
I didn't have to sell a thing because they always had their bingo at the school that evening or whatever and raise the money that they needed, and we never had to sell anything. That was really good.
Well, we'll say this, Donna.
Some of these public schools have some bingo.
Right. Let's say that the Catholics had it worked out very early.
Oh, yeah.
They knew how to get the money.
And then they also, you know, you relied on families. The families would just donate what they were going to donate anyway.
Right, right. Very good. Yes. So, again, I want to remind our listeners that you're in the backyard and listening to Backyard Labrish. And this evening we were going over the start of radio broadcasts on the island of Jamaica. And for the old-timers, I'm sure you can relate to the ZQI days and the rediffusion days and the RJR days. And I think it's still RJR now, isn't it, Leigh?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I have not been back to Kingston.
Don't forget we now have television and
oh,
cable.
Yes.
That stuff.
But I am sure that radio is still perhaps listen to more because of, you know, just the remote parts of the country where everybody would have a radio and they can walk around with it as opposed
well,
to watching
you know,
a television.
Times have changed. Even in the country, they have a boom box before they have a radio.
Oh, you mean to play records?
Yeah.
Well, to make a lot of noise around the countryside.
Right, I know. Well, you know, it for sure, music has always been very, very important on the island, you know, from as far back as you can trace. You know, the music have always been there. So even it went before radio, people would gather in the squares at the end of the week, you know, to have some type of music. And in the old days, it was a live band, because I remember, Leigh, this is how much I remember. I remember spending some time with Aunt Vin, someplace in the country, and she took me to the square, and it, you know what they were doing? Quadrille. Mm-hmm. You know what quadrille is?
Yeah, this English kind of dancing.
Right. And there was live music, you know, people playing the banjo singing along with it. I remember it clearly.
They're dancing.
Yeah, well, I remember it too when I went up into that part of the country in Westmoreland.
I couldn't remember where it was.
And I used to be very happy when on a Friday evening.
Uh-huh.
You would have the four or five guys passing by with their banjos and their guitars heading towards the square.
Right.
As you said.
Uh-huh.
And they would go, and then people would gather around and have fun.
Oh, yes, yes.
So those were the good old days.
Oh, the good old days. It was so much fun.
I got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
It was saying something about, you know, at one point it was like big band and orchestra where they played the swing and jazz. What is the swing?
Yes. Uh-huh.
What is swinging versus, you know, something else? I mean, you're not swinging them in the air? Is that when they swing them in the air?
No, not necessarily. There was a dance called the swing.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there, Leigh?
Yeah, well, the big bands in that era played what's called swing.
Right,
as
right.
opposed to, you know, nowadays they have different names for different popular music. But in those days, and the swing era, even in this country, seems to be the era that is almost eternal, because the music of the 50s and the 60s are picked up now even by teenagers, because the parents used to play those big disc records, and they now have them consolidated onto CDs, the same swing music.
Mm-hmm.
Donna, if you have the cable channels with the music,
uh-huh.
they have a particular what they call it now, genre for swing.
Oh, okay,
right.
You know
what is
you have to know how to do the dances relating to that music.
Do you know how to do the dances?
Yes.
We used to do that in our teenage years. You know, that's the kind of dances we did. And we didn't, I wanted to mention something about the RJR days when I was growing up, you know, when I was young. They didn't play calypso all day, or we didn't have reggae then. You know, reggae is fairly new.
Remember now that the stations were controlled by an Englishman, an English format. So they might have a segment on Calypso or something like that.
We had a Calypso hour. We had a Calypso hour. Do you remember the name of the Sunday evening program that came on? It was one of the favorite times in Jamaica. You remember the name of it? Or do you remember the theme song that they would play?
No.
It was Cruising Down the River on a Sunday afternoon. You remember that?
Yeah.
I never forget that. And, I mean, people just run to the radio when you hear that, Cruising Down the River, and they would sing. They would play love songs.
Oh.
and it was, you know, we would be riding in the cars, going to the airport to watch the planes go off, or going up into St. Andrew up in the hills to watch the sunset. I mean, those were great, gorgeous years, just wonderful years. And you, that music would be so soothing and really, really very nice. But we did what I wanted to. I wish some of our listeners would help me out here. But what I remembered, Leigh, is that we used to play quite a bit of country music.
Yeah.
You know, what they call country music here. We didn't call it country music in those days. I suppose it was just music. But we did have, and when people went to parties, we didn't just dance calypso. I think people have that idea.
No,
we did swing, we did ballroom, we did everything.
Everything, yeah.
It's different from what's going on now, like the dance hall music, where they, I suppose they do
if you watch ballroom dancing, uh-huh. It's ballroom on the television here. They break down ballroom dancing into these different type of dances that we used to do naturally when we were growing up.
Right. But I think that a lot of foreigners believe that, you know, we've always just been a calypso country all the time, you know, playing.
Hold it a minute. Who are you calling foreigners?
like Americans and French.
You're forgetting what country you're in for a minute there. We're the foreigners. I met a woman in the supermarket today. She was in the checkout section, and I think the person ahead of her was having a little problem with the cashier, and she smiled and I smiled and we made a comment, and I said, after I heard her speak to the guy, the cashier, I said to her, I always thought you were a West Indian. And she looks at me with her brows forward. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I used to see you on the bus going to work, from day to day to day. And now I just said, no. And when she opened up, she was from North Carolina or South Carolina.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So why did you think she was a West Indian?
Just because of the way she acted and the way she looked. That is not, I mean, so in other words, she said, in fact, she said her sister was married to she didn't say Jamaican, I think she meant a Jamaican, and he was no good.
Oops.
And she said she'd never been to, before she said that, she said she'd never been to the islands after the comment I made. So I said, you got to go. And then, but she was a very nice lady.
Right.
Over all these years, I mean, you see these people commuting and you never speak to them. And here it is. This is maybe over a period of 30, 35 years.
Isn't that
something? I'm now speaking to the woman in the cash out line.
Oh, my goodness.
I like that.
Well, you know, and I must commend you for making the first move.
Well, nowadays, look, I'm a friendly guy, and I want everybody to know it before I crawl.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Okay.
Because, you know, as a lot of people are saying now, and the president say, you know, we really have to get more into knowing our neighbors, knowing, you know, being aware of what's going on, pooling together. I mean, this is time for it.
You're saying that because I'm so disgusted with how uncivil people are now, and how abrupt and discourteous people are that it turns me off. So if I can pass through a smile or a little goodwill here or there, I'm going to do it, you know, because I'm really sick of it.
Well, I'm going to use that as one of our ways to, encourage all our listeners, people listening even into the archive show, to let's expand on what our loyal listener, Mr. Lay Nunes from the Yankee city of New York, is sharing with
the
us
Bronx,
this evening.
The Bronx.
Well, that's close to New York. And, you know, someone that you might have been noticing for years and thinking that they are who they are might surprise you. So why don't you just say, hello, I'm Margaret, and you are? And wait for an answer. So let's warm up. It took you 30 years, Lay, to speak to that lady who you had seen and admired. So that's a big breakthrough. And I hope that you will do this perhaps more often. Pick somebody out that you've seen over and over but never said hello. And guess what? I'm going to do the same.
Good. How about you, Donna?
Yes. I'm going to make a good effort at it.
Yeah. All right, so that's our little challenge and tip for this week. And listen, old Mama Margaret here going to be checking on the results, like Dr. Beverly Hall, who we celebrated today as our person of the week. I'm going to be checking on you to find out if you really did it. So you have to, now this is not necessarily a new person, but somebody that you've been seeing over and over and over and never said hello. How about that?
All right.
Could be a neighbor.
Yeah, could be a neighbor. Yeah, I have quite a few neighbors that I've never physically spoken to. I've waved. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, I gotta do better. I got a new neighbor, and I waved at her, but I haven't, you know, actually gone on and formally introduced myself. So I'm going to make a definite effort this before the end of this week to go over there. And
especially if it's a new neighbor, it's easier to do it than to an older, you know, person that you've seen for a good while.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
now, I have a question really quick. Okay, so what is a mento band, and what is a traveling troubadour?
Good question.
You want to take that one, Leigh?
Well, you remember I just mentioned these guys walking down to the square?
Mm-hmm.
These guys are, in a sense, traveling
troubadours.
Some of them were even on horses, you know, they take their horse to show off that they had a horse down to the square with their friends and musical instruments. So that's really a troubadour. That's what he does. And serenade the women as they go down.
Mm-hmm.
And a mento band is really a dying, what you call it now, specie. Mento bands were made up of banjo players. A lot of people don't know what a banjo is, but it's a stringed instrument akin to a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But
shaped differently.
The sound in it is quite different. The strings are different. And the base of it is sort of round.
Mm-hmm.
And
Instead of.
If you remember this fella, there's a sibling of the banjo, which is a ukulele,
mm-hmm.
which Arthur Godfrey made famous on his program. Maybe you are not old enough to remember Arthur Godfrey on CBS every morning. It was a morning show. And Julius LaRosa sang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
Okay. So I went to a very exclusive hotel in Negril. I put it that way because as I'm talking to you, I can't remember the name of the hotel. But one of the perks was that you had a night out on a yacht. And so I was very taken back in that they had a mentor band, a guy, about six different players in the band playing their instrument, and they would play these old songs like "Carry Me," "Aki Goal," and you know, these kind of tunes.
Right.
And I was just transfixed for the whole thing. So they took an intermission, and one of the guys in the band, I guess the leader of the band, came over and asked me, he says, "You're really eating that thing up, this thing up?" I said, "I mean, this sound is so interesting, you know, because
right.
prior to that, I was never so close to a mental band."
Right.
And I talked to the guy, and you know what he said to me?
Mm-mm.
He said that somebody really listened to them and talked about them. He said, and I wanted to give him a tip at the end of the show. He says, "Don't give me a tip." He says, "When you go back to the States, send me some banjo strings."
Oh.
And I felt so good about that. I sent him three sets of banjo strings. And, you know, it's something that you... And the thing about it, Donna, is that you were... I spent bands at other hotels after that, you know, I became aware of them. And you would always notice that the banjo players never have any teeth.
Uh-huh, because they're very old. Usually they're old.
It's a dying
it's dying,
breed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I want to let Donna know and our listeners know that we had mento before we had calypso, really. The
yeah.
beat was a mento beat, and it's
yeah.
a little different beat than the calypso beat.
And,
just
and
like
in,
the calypso, like the reggae is different from the calypso beat. So it's like a progression of the music, huh?
Right, and you don't necessarily dance to their music, even though you can dance to it. You more or less listen to the songs and the words in the songs.
Right, because like the country music, the songs usually have a story.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, you with me, Donna? Donna?
Yes, I hear you.
You know, the songs have a story, but there's a different beat to the mento, and there's a different sort of dance to the mento than the calypso. And just like how there's a different beat to the reggae than the calypso. So, but the original beat was the mento. Mento was before calypso, and calypso was before reggae. And now it's not out there now. We don't know anything about, at least I don't know anything about the dancehall music. But the popular music on the island now for the islanders is the dancehall music, which is a different beat from the reggae. So that's the musical progression is what I would call it. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. And with that, I am going to bid our listeners good night. And thank you for tuning in to The Backyard. We just have so much fun here every week. And we hope that more of you will join, and not only join, but raise your hands so you can interact with us. And please, for those of you listening online, forgive us. We're not yet in the chat room. We'll be there one of these days very soon. And we ask you again to visit our website at backyardlabrish.com. Leave us a comment and also join our backyard community. So, do we have any, from our two co-hosts, do we have any parting words for our listeners?
Well, I just really enjoyed it. I hope everyone enjoyed labrishing with us, and it was very educational for me, and just look forward to next week.
All right, Leigh.
I say the same thing, and I say good night from the Bronx,
home of the Yankees. Okay, all righty. It's your
Bye.
Mantra.
Yeah,
we can't talk about our team yet, right, Donna?
No.
We'll wait till we have something to shout about.
Oh,
then,
yeah.
Boy, are we going to shout.
I know.
Anyway,
okay,
good night.
Good night
to all our listeners. We thank you for tuning in. And next week, we're going to have another exciting bit of tidbit for you, as well as our person of the week. Remember, our objective here in the backyard is to celebrate and the great culture of our country as we remembered it when we were growing up. So come by and share some of your stories with us and tell us the way it used to be back in your day. So with that, this is Margaret saying good night. Thank you for listening, and we'll hope to see you next week.